Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore. And Baltimore Positive, we are positively into football season, and we're going to be talking plenty of football. Luke's out in Owings Mills all week long. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. Also, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming to Coco's next week with our mayor, Brandon Scott, all, of course, powered up by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. But we get together with Don Moeller, and we have these Baltimore Positive conversations each and every week, mixing things up. Don, the whole mix-up here, we go from football to community to politics to charity and all of that stuff. But sometimes we bring it home here, and I know this guest is one of your favorites. We had him on recently again, and I think we're talking about the Delegate Cardin. We wind up having people with problems and solving these problems. So I know you have a long list of these things for us this week, Don.
Well, I think Delegate John Cardin from Baltimore County's 11th District. I think that's one of the things that actually, we'll get him to talk a little bit about that, about what really pushes his button, what floats his boats. And a lot of it is what you said, Nestor, you really captured it there. It's really trying to get out there and make a difference for the folks in his district and across the state. So again, welcome back to Baltimore Positive, Delegate John Cardin. John, thanks for coming back.
Thank you guys very much. Nestor, it's great to see you. And Don, it's always a pleasure.
Great to have you back. You know, one of the things I was thinking about, Delegate, right before we came on, and it wasn't one of the topics that I had listed, but I thought every now and then I'll hear folks say, you know, I know that General Assembly's in session for 90 days. What do these men and women do for the rest of it? In other words, I think they've got an image of you. You know, we get in there for 90 days, we have a few nice meals, and we make that happen. And then we come back and put our feet up, and it's really, nothing could be further from the truth, right? Give folks a sense of what delegates and senators do in that other 9 months, and how it really isn't a part-time gig anymore.
It's a great question. And by the way, it's really not. I mean, many people, this is a full-time job for them. The legislative session where we go in and we make, we vote on legislation lasts for 90 days, essentially the first 90 days of the year. For the rest of the year, we are preparing for those first 90 days. We are getting our legislation prepped up. We're talking to opponents and proponents of bills that we're interested in making sure that they pass or that they fail, depending on what side you're on. We are meeting with communities. We are getting to as many of our associations in our local communities as we can. We're speaking with colleagues. We are trying to prepare and make sure that Maryland moves forward. At the same time, the vast majority of us have full-time jobs. I'm an attorney. I have a full-time law practice. I know other folks who are barkeepers or are insurance agents, everything. It runs the gamut. And
I hope you have a good staff.
So it's important to have a good staff. It's important to make sure that you are a good communicator and that you, and as we find out, the people who are better communicators and better organized, organizational management is key. Those are the ones who are getting important things accomplished.
Well, John, how do you, I love that thread because it sets up really, I think, this image of legislators trying to work with their communities, take the pulse of their community, identify the priorities of the communities, and then talk about how we codify that in terms of legislation to make the state a better place to live. How do you, as a delegate and an elected official, try to ensure that it's not just the loudest and the most strident voices that are getting through to you, but that you really are trying to get a balance of what the guy and gal on the street care about?
Sure. You're hitting the nail on the head. So we have a number of government advocates and lobbyists who come and speak to us all the time, as well as community members.
It's different, though, because a community member is coming in out of the heart. Some of these other people are coming because somebody's paying them to be there, right? Literally.
That is correct. And it is oftentimes, if you want to, it's very easy to find out who is coming and being honest and direct and is out for the best interest of the community or of the state. And of course, we always have to, as legislators, we have to sort of balance what's important and good for the entire state and for the entire community versus our constituency. And oftentimes those are at odds, and you have to figure out how to gracefully navigate through that. For example, I'll give you an example where we wanted to pass legislation that was going to improve sewage and sewage treatment, particularly in Baltimore City and the surrounding areas because of the infrastructure issues we have. However, the cost to the septic systems that oftentimes are running just fine out in the Western Maryland or on the Eastern Shore could be astronomical. And we have to figure out how to balance those to have a safe Baltimore City and how to work with partners who are on the Eastern Shore in Western Maryland.
Well, John, I would say every day's infrastructure day here, right? I mean, I've traveled the state. It always feels like some crazy sunk cost to build roads and do these things until you don't do them, right? Or you flush the toilet and it doesn't work anymore, right? So these are costs that the government has to take on that are probably unpopular with everyone until the sewage backs up, until I see the harbor get drained in on. And then I start asking questions as citizens saying, who's protecting us? And I guess that's where people like you come in and you say about these 90 days, you're trying to take the other 9 months and figure out how you can be creative about solving problems, right? And which problems you can take to Annapolis and get solved. And who's going to find that to be popular?
So you want to come and help be my PR guy? I'd be happy to have you.
Dude, I almost ran for mayor. Mueller told me it was a bad idea. I'm going to talk to Brandon Scott about it next week and see how it's going for him.
It was a bad idea.
I'm going to bring up Brandon to see if Brandon thought it was a bad idea, by the way, but go ahead.
I mean, so we have, you know, we have to deal with, you know, the city politicians and elected officials and city councilmen the same as way we have to deal with our county council. And we are, and you know, the state is oftentimes providing the money, but we got to make sure that's being used for the right purposes. So whether it comes to infrastructure and making sure that we're not dumping just large amounts of sewage and non-point pollution into the bay, we have to continue to fight for that. And of course, nobody wants their taxes to be raised or their utility costs to go up. At the same time, you know, we want to live in a safe environment, safe place where we know that our drinking water is safe. Baltimore City water, which is, by the way, used for the county and for many other surrounding counties, is some of the safest, best water in the country. We don't want that to change. We don't want to lose our reputation of having some of the best water around. And it costs money. We have to figure out how to.
See, Don's smiling because he knows what a water freak I am, because I always think sort of that it's life. You know, it's how we stay alive. It's really, really important, especially with what happened in Flint, Michigan, which probably, you know, put me on the whole bent to do Baltimore Positive, because I thought it better not happen here. I live here. You know, we better not be having bottled water here in 2022.
Let me tell you something. With what's happening, it's the climate issues, climate change, safe water and breathable air are existential issues that are going to define who we are as elected officials and as communities in the next decade.
I love how you bring up the air, because I've choked on the air out in Montana from forest fire. You know, 2 nights I spent in Montana, I woke up black coming out of me because of the soot. And I thought to myself, this kind of issue we don't talk about in Baltimore much around here, do we? But we probably should be, right?
Hey, we had like this summer, we had like over a dozen code orange days. We're not in the clear here either.
When you look up and see the sun and there's three halos around it, you talk about one of those days, right?
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful, but it's dangerous at the same time. So,
well, John, you talked about identifying issues, and there are a couple that you really have become I guess passionate about, I identified with, and one of them is, and I looked at it twice and I thought, wait a minute, this is 2021. What are we talking about that bounty hunters can execute? No, not worth. I'm thinking back to when I'm a little kid and watching Steve McQueen in Wanted Dead and Alive.
This sounds like something they do in Texas.
That's what I thought. I read it, Nestor, and I thought, wait a minute, we're in Maryland. What is the delegate talking about? So fill us in about bounty hunters and no knock warrants in the state of Maryland.
We spent hours and hours and hours dealing with police reform last year. We're gonna deal with it again this year. We're gonna have to do some fixes to some of the legislation we passed. But the fact is that no-knock warrants was a major part of this, and limiting the ability for police to be able to just bang down somebody's door for safety reasons. If you remember Breonna Taylor from Kentucky and what happened there.
Well, the situation in Dallas was even crazier, right?
Yeah. So we need, and by the way, I had a case when I was a young lawyer, the exact same fact pattern as Breonna Taylor, except thank God nobody got killed, but they just busted in based on an ex-girlfriend's, they thought it was an ex-girlfriend's place, and they thought maybe they could find something, and went up to the Court of Special Appeals. I wound up losing the case. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that police now have some major restrictions on what they can do. But bounty hunters, otherwise known as bail bondsmen and other folks that have some skin in the game, still don't have any of those requirements on them. So we're going to try and work on some legislation.
Well, the delegates, I'm going to slow you down again because I think Nestor and I, our heads are spinning. Are you telling me that in the state of Maryland, a private detective or a bail bondsman or, we'll call them bounty hunters, can go to a judge and get a no-knock warrant How does it work?
No. Right now, they can be armed, can know that somebody has skipped bail, and then if they know that they're there, they can bust down their door and go get them. That is from what I understand. I've spoken to a couple of bail bondsmen, and from what I understand, that is presently legal. And they're saying to us, "Why are we? Look, they're having to put themselves in harm's way." Now, some of these guys like that because they like being, a little crazy and out of control. But for the most part, they don't want to have the rights to do more than what the police can do, because they're putting themselves in harm's way.
That's crazy. Right. I mean, right. Just on the face of it, that if they have more rights than the police, that's crazy.
This is the kind of thing. I mean, every day anymore, and we'll talk about your uncle later in the segment, who just
had a great crab cake with him last week.
Yeah, continues to be a shining light in a world of crazy down there. But every day when I watch what's happening in Washington, I conclude this. I say, I love public service. I love public servants. Most of the folks I've ever encountered really do try and want to do the right thing. But I understand why the public would be following what's happening in government across the country and come to the conclusions that they do, that we're all just a bunch of knuckleheads. And when you talk about, I'm with Nestor. He likes to call this social studies class. When you tell us that,
Don was a social studies teacher, John.
Right.
Did you know that?
I didn't teach about
no-knock.
No.
No, John was, Don was a social studies teacher in the late 70s. I didn't get to him until 82 at Dundalk. He had already moved into management. So I never had a social studies course with him because he was my guidance counselor. You saw that turned out, right? So this social studies part of this is, I think, a lot of Americans would flunk seventh grade social studies right now, which is all the more reason that we try to educate people about what people do.
Yeah. So picking up on that, what's the fix, John, for this? What's the fix so that bounty hunters and private eyes can't just say, "Hey, I think there's somebody in Nestor's house. I'm going to go kick his door in." I mean, what's the fix for this?
So we already have the model in what we've done with, police. Basically, they have to get they have to have two or three different people oversee the warrant or the willingness to go in and try and capture somebody. And we can do that as well in the private sector. It just has to be, we have to figure out who are the right people to look at the information and say, yes, this is adequate. Let's go through it. And we'll work with the state's attorney's office or the and Department of Public Safety and figure out who the right people are to get approvals.
And well, now you've brought this issue to our attention, we'll certainly have you back on, and we'll monitor it as the session moves forward this winter. Look, another issue
the bail industry has really been reduced by about 90%. This is not a huge issue. It's just that we're putting people's lives in harm's way for no necessary reason. So that's just, we just want to solve this small problem. And it was an oversight. The Attorney General's office didn't think about this. The Judiciary Committee didn't think about this when we passed legislation on police reform last year.
Yeah, who would think about it? Right, exactly. Hey, one real quick before I move to the next issue, you mentioned the reduction in bail bondsmen. Is that related to increasingly moving away from cash bail, which I know my predecessor, Kevin Kamenetz, really opposed to cash bail?
Right. Yeah. So we put in new systems of trying to come up with ways for oversight of people who are due to go to court for various and sundry reasons. And so there's much, much, much reduced cash bail.
Which to me certainly is a key criminal justice issue. Again, we're with 11th District Delegate in Baltimore County, Delegate John Cardin. John, one of the other issues that I know really important to you is trying to ensure that small business and particularly women-owned businesses are getting treated fairly. And again, I think a lot of folks out there driving around, listening in their car, listening at home would say, well, what do you mean they're not? They're not? And so tell us.
Let me tell you where some one gaps situation are. That drives me crazy. So we have an archaic law in Maryland that says that engineers and architects are, when they bid on a project with the state, they are required to cover the state's legal fees for any legal action taken, regardless of whether they are found to be at fault. Nestor, think about that for a second. So when you're bidding on a contract and you can't get insurance on this, and you are you're a small company, you're a women-owned company that doesn't have a national presence, you're just here in Maryland, and you want to bid on doing a pedestrian bridge over Reisterstown Road in my district, and it's a $1 million project, and you gotta add an extra $100,000, $200,000 into your bid simply because you're not sure whether somebody's going to sue somebody for something that, has nothing to do with anything, any of the work that you did as a architect, because it didn't have to do with the design. But the state is not willing to accept the legal responsibility of paying for their own lawyers. And it's crazy to me. So these people cannot bid on these projects. And so winds up being these national companies that wind up bidding on all these.
Because they have better lawyers, right? Literally, right?
Literally. Literally. And
sounds a little like an FCC license in my neck of the woods, too. A little bit like that.
Well, the fact is that the state is basically saying, because we can, we want you to pay our legal fees. And you're found not to be at fault in any way, but somebody else is at fault, but or we're at fault, but because we can, we're going to have you pay our legal fees. And therefore these small businesses and these minority owned businesses aren't able to even bid on the contract. And if they do, and they wind up having to pay the legal fees, they wind up going bankrupt.
It could wipe them out. It would wipe them out, right? Literally.
And it would wipe them out. And because the state doesn't want to spend the money on a few extra lawyers in making sure that they cover their own legal costs. And
well,
I find that
do you have support for that delegate among other legislators, or are you out there on an island?
I've counted the votes. I have the votes in. I just need to get this legislation to be voted on in my committee. The only entity that is opposed to the legislation, I have everybody in favor, is the Office of the Attorney General, because it's going to basically increase budgets.
John Cardin is here. He is the delegate in the 11th District. I began this thing 20 minutes ago by saying, we put problems in front of delegates and say, go down and solve them, go down and twist arms and get 140 people to, change their minds about something that was put in law 50 years ago. At what point does it become a boiling issue for you? What point does it become like, all right, I'm going to be the guy to act on this. I'm going to be the guy going around looking to get votes. I don't want to say it would be easy to be lazy as a delegate, but certainly all of these things are issues you see that you feel like you want to pursue and tackle. Yeah. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of courage, but more than that, the conviction of this is important enough for me to put the time forward on behalf of everybody to get this thing changed. At what point does it boil on you to say, I'm going to write this?
When you can actually see how your work impacts somebody, makes their life better, that's when it really matters. And that's why we're down there. We had a nearly 80% increase in deaths because of overdose on drugs. Yet I've been trying to pass Good Samaritan legislation that that prohibits you from getting arrested if you call 911 to help somebody who's having an overdose. Perhaps you're there using illicit drugs, for possession, not for distribution or for manufacturing, but if you're trespassing, you should not be arrested if you call 911 to have somebody help them with an overdose. And I can't get this legislation passed because I got the original Good Samaritan legislation passed back in 2013 because I got the State Attorneys Association, the police, and the advocates for drug reform to all work together. I can't get that now because...
Well, there's a philosophy here, let these people die, right? Like, literally, they're drug addicts, screw them, right? Like, well, you're always fighting that, right?
Let's hear the delegate say why you can't get it passed.
What's that?
You started to say why you couldn't get it passed.
Wait, because we have, it's very difficult to find advocates for drug addicts. That is correct. But these are people's lives, and these are your neighbors. And let me tell you something, this happens everywhere across the state. You think you don't have overdose issues in your district, in your community, you're sticking your head in the sand.
And this isn't white or black or east or west or you know, economic, right? This is literally across all socioeconomic strains.
Absolutely. And it's increased because COVID has made it even as exacerbated it even worse.
Well, we're all sitting home, right? Literally.
So the problem is that legislators are not going to step outside of their comfort zone if they don't have everybody in agreement. And I need to get all these different advocacy groups, whether the law enforcement on one side and the advocacy for drug treatment on the other side, all together. And it's just, it can be very, very complicated to get that to happen.
I feel like I was somewhere, I was traveling this week and I heard on the radio an ad, and it must've been in a different state based on what you're telling me, but that you could not be arrested. Like there literally was a public service announcement that if you see someone having an overdose that you could call and you could not be prosecuted in any way. Is there some place else where it is that you're saying, look, they do it here?
All over the country. We have a Good Samaritan law in place in Maryland, but it doesn't do what you just described. Unfortunately, it's just for it doesn't work because the police have to actually adhere to it and decide not to arrest people.
What committee, John, vets these bills?
That goes to the Judiciary Committee, which is the committee I'm on. The indemnity bill goes to my subcommittee, the Civil Law and Procedure Subcommittee bill, the one that I was talking about for small businesses. I try and deal a lot with, and you asked about what I'm passionate about, election law reform, making sure that everybody has the ability to vote, making sure that we're confident in our voting systems, making sure that we have decent campaign finance, so that people, you know, there's not this, all this dark money going into politics. All that has been a passion of mine since I chaired the election law subcommittee years and years ago.
I want to throw one out for you that Nestor and I pushed all last session. I think we got part of the way there. I'm not sure we got all the way there. And that is, I want to see everyone in the nation, but certainly Maryland, mandate that local boards of elections count the early vote as it comes in and not wait. And because I think I'll go back, I'll use Pennsylvania as an example. All of this big lie, brouhaha that the ex-celebrity president has based his whole life on. I believe the main culprit in all that are the delayed results in these states who aren't allowed to count.
Well, we had it in the city here. And we're going to have Brandon Scott on next week.
Count
every day there was a newspaper tally that said Sheila, 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 and then Brandon wins. You know, I don't think anybody questioned it here, but that's how things get questioned, right?
And it seems to me, Delegate, that at 8 o'clock or 8:15, put it to you this way, the moment the polls are closed, so we know we let people stay in line until the last person is voted. So once the polls are closed, it seems to me we ought to turn a switch and the 50, 60, 70% that have voted absentee or voted early, they should be tabulated immediately and we would have a good sense by 8:30. And that seems to me to be an easy change. So I hope you'll take a look at that.
Sure. So, you know, you don't need legislation to do that. That can be done.
I understand, but we need to kick them a little bit.
Right. Many, absolutely. And we can talk about that. I'm happy to consider something like that because I happen to agree with you that that should be.
Tom would run for House delegates to get that passed. That's how the top he is because at the heart of our whole democracy, what this clown act has done down in Florida is really undermine the confidence of elections in this country. Anything we can do to restore that would be very beneficial moving forward.
It's ridiculous. And I do give a shout out, particularly the one closest to me, Katie Brown in Baltimore County. They've done that. They've run them. They load their totals up. And the county is really a model of efficiency in being able to see how, and that's important to you because you represent Baltimore County. Speaking of elections, you've got all kinds of options for 2022. You might want to be this. You might want to be that. You might.
This is the part where when you come on the show, Don makes every politician cringe because he's always interested in your business.
Want to know what's up next.
Well,
exactly.
It's funny because Don and I have actually had this discussion just a little while ago. And I'm going to tell him, I may tell him something that he doesn't actually know because I've made a decision that's different.
We're making news. Hold on. He loves this. Let me get a pen. Hold on.
Different from our conversation?
Different from our conversation. I've been in the House delegates for 16 years now, and I've decided that I'm going to remain where I am. I think that my opportunities, my ability to make a difference and help the community is much better here in the House delegates. I'm going to run for reelection. I was considering a couple other options, some local county options in court management, and I think that I will be happier making a difference from Annapolis.
How hard was that decision, John? Because, I mean, you and I talked a couple of times about the decision.
Oh,
I would have probably, had I been a betting man, I would have assumed you had reached another conclusion. So how difficult was this?
It was not an easy decision. My interest, my goal as a public servant is to try and do what I can to improve the quality of life for all Marylanders and for my community. Going back into as a full-time lawyer and enjoying law, I thought going into court administration and trying to be the clerk of the probate court or the register of wills, as it might be, would be a great place for me to actually make an important difference in people's lives who are at a vulnerable state in their life when they've just lost a loved one.
Go ahead.
At the same time, I have been doing a great work on improving or reducing cyberbullying, helping young people, helping minority and women-owned businesses, those kinds of issues where, you know, you'll be pigeonholed in the register of wills just dealing with probate and people's estates and making sure that they're taken care of. So I'm looking forward to continuing to expand my ability to help people all over the state.
Well, good luck. And we'll have you back and talk about that. As you get on out of here, boy, Nestor, something near and dear to Nestor's heart. Here again, we read this article where our good friend from Fadley's, Damie Hahn, is down in D.C. trying to fight to get some fair support for restaurateurs across the country who really got shafted. I'm going to clean it up here for the podcast. We could use other words by the original bill. They didn't get – some companies got millions. A little company like Fadley's got nothing. It was outrageous. And who's in the middle of trying to help them but your uncle? I see he's right in the middle now trying to fight for this reconciliation bill with a real focus, something your uncle really cares about, dental care and expanding dental coverage to people across the country. Seems to me that your uncle, Senator Bancorp, is always, day in and day out, just trying quietly to do the right thing. Talk about your family legacy and what that means to you as a nephew and your commitment to public service.
So it's sometimes a last name can be a curse. It can be a blessing. I always look at it as a blessing. I obviously have my uncle who's been in public service, one of the longest running elected officials in the state of Maryland, has done some amazing work. And he's very quiet and he's very thoughtful and intellectual about how he handles everything. And he's beloved. And he's a good person to be, an amazing mentor.
Did you ever know him with a life without service? Like from the time you were little, like he's been service his whole life, literally, right?
He was elected in the House delegates, before I was born.
Right.
So he was in the House delegates for 20 years. I think he was elected in 1966 and I was born in 1970. But I do remember, him being speaker and going down to the speaker's office when he was speaker. And I remember, and by the way, it didn't start with him. My grandfather was in the House delegates in the 30s. My great uncle Maurice was in the House delegates in the 40s and 50s. My uncle was in the House delegates in the 60s, 70s, 80s. Nobody was in there in the 90s. I was in there in the 2000s, 2010s. And so who knows? Maybe there'll be another card and that'll come up and take over when I decide to hang it up.
Well, Nestor's going to take us out of here, but he's the image that I get when my head explodes, whenever someone says to me, all politicians are on the take. They only care about themselves. And the image that I immediately get is your uncle, Senator Bancorp. And I say, you guys just don't have a clue about how good some of these people are. And really, really epitomized by your uncle. So, John, as always, thank you. Nestor, take us out of here.
Well, you always enjoy visiting with Uncle Ben as well. But more than that, when he was sitting next to me talking about legislation to outlaw people talking about Maryland crab cakes without serving Maryland crab meat, I thought, give him hell, Ben. That's what I thought. So, John, always good to have you on and visit from the 11th District. John Cardin, our delegate out on the northwest side in the county. And, of course, Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, always here as a part of all we do at Baltimore Positive. We mentioned Damian Hahn and our friends at Fadley's. We're going to be getting back over there. I had a crab cake there last Monday with my boy John Keller. Delicious, as always. Brought one home for my wife and for all of our sponsors. We're back over at State Fair El Guapo, our friends over at the Beaumont as well. We had Evan Brown on last week. You can find that out at Baltimore Positive. Luke is out in Owings Mills doing all things Ravens. It feels good to say that in Ravens season. All of it brought to you by our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. And don't forget, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour coming to you. Nacho Mama's this week in Towson. And then next week, we're going to be at Coco's with our mayor, Brandon Scott, all powered up by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. I am Nestor. On behalf of Don Moeller, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.